At Total Wine & More, find the best gifts for everyone on your list, whether it's a Cabernet for sis or a single barrel bourbon that dad will love. With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you'll always find what you love and love what you find. Only at Total Wine & More. Spirits not sold in Virginia and North Carolina. Drink responsibly. B21. Where can you find the best gifts at great low prices that everyone will love? At Total Wine & More, of course, with so many great bottles to choose from. Find something for everyone on your list, whether it's a Cabernet for your sis, sparkling wine for a coworker, or a single barrel bourbon for dad. And if you need any help, just ask one of their friendly guides for advice. With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you'll always find what you love and love what you find. Only at Total Wine & More. Spirits not sold in Virginia and North Carolina. Drink responsibly. B21.
Hi, I'm Kristen McGlory, lifelong genius hunter. For a decade, I've been unearthing the recipes that have changed the way we cook. Now, on the Genius Recipe Tapes, we go behind the scenes with the geniuses themselves. Now that we're coming to the end of the year, it's a good time to take a look back at what 2022 brought us. It was a big year here. Simply Genius, the newest Genius cookbook that I had been working on for 4 years, came out, and I was finally able to share recipes and stories from it with all of you. From an update on Dory Greenspan's iconic French yogurt cake, to Hedy McKinnon's sheet pan gnocchi with chili crisp and baby bok choy, to Heidi Swanson's 5-minute tomato sauce, to Tara O'Brady's basic great chocolate chip cookies that are faster, easier, and in the hearts and minds of the internet, better than the recipe on the back of the chocolate chip bag. Also in 2022, on this podcast, we heard about the genius kitchen discoveries that shaped the lives of cooking legends like Nigella Lawson and Julie Sani, and first-time superstar authors like Frankie Gaw and Ali Slagle, too. And best of all, as the world continues to inch back toward normalcy, we are seeing more and more opportunities to cook with family and friends again. Every year in Genius Recipes, I love taking a look at the recipes that have really struck a chord with you all. And to help me with this, I am so happy to be joined by a very special guest, the co-founder of Food 52 and my mentor for about 13 years, Amanda Hesser. Amanda and I go way back to when Food 52's test kitchen was in her apartment and our office was her kitchen table. That was where so many good things at Food 52 were born, including the Genius Recipes column that led to this very podcast. Now, Amanda has seen it all, everything Food 52 has done from the very beginning. So there's no one better to talk about some of the highlights of 2022 and what we have to look forward to in 2023. But first, I was curious to know, out of everything that Amanda made in her kitchen this year, what her favorite was.
I think the first one that stands out to me is Julia Tertian's fried eggs with yogurt and yogurt and lemon. Like, it intrigued me because, well, I think I'm trying to remember if I used, is it coconut yogurt? Or I think maybe I used coconut yogurt, actually, because I don't do dairy, fresh dairy, but you can use regular yogurt. And, but the idea of like taking this like crisp fried egg and then laying it in a bed of yogurt seemed like odd to me. And then I discovered that it was the most amazing mix of textures and super delicious. And the tang of the yogurt was like a really nice counterpoint. And then you sprinkled on some cilantro. But there's another genius recipe that you have done about where eggs are cooked in cream, like sauteed in cream. Just the idea that various forms of milk and cream are like such friends of the egg.
You're reminding me, too, when you're talking about the tang and how, you know, yogurt and lemon on top of egg seems like a lot of tang, a lot of acid, and can be actually so bracing and invigorating in the morning, and kind of exactly what egg yolk needed all along that we didn't realize, maybe.
Yeah.
That the place that I think I first saw that was with Roger Verger's fried eggs with wine vinegar. And it's just like fried eggs in a pan, and then you kind of deglaze the pan with some vinegar. And that was, I think, the first recipe that started out the Genius Recipes cookbook. Like, even when I make Canal House's fried eggs where they spoon olive oil that has some smoked paprika in it over the eggs, and you can do it with all kinds of different spices and herbs, whatever you want to flavor the oil with. it's so delicious and so fun to see how different spices will take that in so many different directions. But a lot of times it's the suggestion to, like, you know, put in like a little squeeze of lemon or vinegar at the end.
I love that that vinegar eggs recipe also, just because, you know, when you splash the reduced the reduction kind of over the eggs, it's just like these really beautiful streaks of kind of, you know, dark red. It's a very beautiful looking dish. It's very dramatic, I think.
Mm-hmm. And it also reminds me, my friend Anita Shepherd, she adds hot sauce to things when she wants not just spice, but vinegar. And if you think about, like, Tabasco, like, there's a lot of vinegar in them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when people put hot sauce on their eggs, it's for the spice, but also for the acid.
So I feel
I've never really forgotten that. She adds it when a dish needs acid.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I just was getting so excited about vinegar. But
good.
There's a food nerd quote for you. I feel like still culturally, well, just acid generally, I think, is something that is getting more and more appreciated. Mm-hmm. But I think vinegar, you know, specifically, like, has been largely just like this kind of thing that was to be paired with a fat and something that you kind of just learned, like, needed to go into certain sauces or, you know, dressings. Whereas it's actually this, like, incredibly powerful tool. And I think I may have told you this before, but a friend of mine is a very good chef. And next to his stove in his home kitchen, there is no oil. And just to be very clear, these are not super close to a stove, so they're not being damaged by the you know, ambient heat. But it's only vinegars. He just had like a selection. He has a selection of like really super high quality, beautiful vinegars, because that to him is like that's the tool that he turns to most when he's cooking. And obviously, you know, salt. But I just was really, it really kind of changed my thinking about vinegar when I saw that, because I was like, oh, right. It's actually this really super specific and powerful tool that, you know, something like a fat doesn't really quite have.
Do you notice when he tends to add acids? Like, is it usually at the end, or is it all along as he's tasting and cooking?
No, it's usually at the end, but it's just like, it's kind of like nothing is finished until the acid balance is right.
Wow.
You know, I think we often think, like, you know, because, you know, it's become sort of a trope that, like, you know, taste as you go and season as you go. But the sort of implied seasoning is salt and pepper.
I do wonder if it extends all the way to ketchup too, since, you know, that's something that a lot of people do put on their eggs. There's sweetness in ketchup, but there's also a lot of tang. I know.
Yes.
Are you a ketchup on eggs person?
I am not. But I am definitely. It actually grosses me out, and I can't explain it. Maybe I just need to immerse myself in the world of ketchups with eggs. But I'm definitely a Tabasco and, you know, hot sauce and that kind of person, which I know, you know, perhaps seems like a contradiction that I wouldn't be open to ketchup. But, you know, there are years ahead for me to evolve into a more complete human.
Yeah, we're all growing and changing. I also tend towards, like, ketchup has to be there for my burgers and fries, but it's not something that had to be there for eggs. Where I've seen, you know, my old college roommates, that was not the case. It was like more ketchup than eggs for them sometimes.
Yeah. And I, you know, I put ketchup on my burger. I'm not, you know, I'm not completely out of touch with our culture.
An animal.
I'm not uncivilized. Yeah.
Well, any other standout recipes that were really memorable for you this year?
Yes. And actually another genius recipe, which is the chicken with extra crispy skin, the roast chicken with extra crispy skin, which it blew my mind from a technique standpoint. And I feel like it's going to forever change the way I make roast chicken. This recipe comes from Lindsay Maitland Hunt. You know, essentially you take a whole chicken, season it very simply, kind of salt, pepper, some, you know, stuff some herbs and lemon into the cavity, and then put it in a 300 degree oven and cook it real slow, you know, until it's cooked through. Now, actually, if you do that, like, it actually surprised me how crisp the skin got, even just at 300 degrees. But of course, you know, when you're roasting a chicken, it's like the top, the parts that are exposed to the air, they'll get crisp, but often what's underneath, you know, is that's like sitting in the juices does not. So with this chicken. Then you take it out, you let it cool enough so that you can touch it, and then you pull all the skin off, like every last bit of skin off of the chicken, which feels really wrong. And I trusted Lindsay. I trusted you. I went with it. And then you take the chicken and you lay it out on a baking sheet and you stick it in a 420, I think it's 425 degree oven, and let that skin crisp up. Meanwhile, you pull all the chicken meat off of the bones of the chicken and just basically kind of like pulled chicken onto a platter. And then you take the crisp skin when it comes out of the oven, and it's like a potato chip, and you just crumble it over the top of the shredded chicken, add some chopped herbs, some lemon, and it is so delicious. And so so the chicken is perfectly cooked because it's been slow cooked, and it basically falls off the bone, the chicken meat. And then the skin is crisper than any chicken skin you've ever had. And it just like, it checks all the boxes. Plus it's like super easy. You don't have to worry about carving. You don't have to worry about a lot of the fussy things that you often do with other roast chicken recipes. It's like, there's no brining. There's no like drying, like letting the chicken, like I remember there was this whole thing, and I actually wrote about it for the New York Times, when I went into a restaurant kitchen and all the birds were like all the poultry was just like sitting out uncovered, and asked why. It was because they wanted to dry out the skin so that it crisped better in the oven. I wrote about that, you know, like people that became kind of like, I mean, not because of me, but other people wrote about it too, but it became sort of a norm, right? Of a normal technique that people use to increase the crispness of their skin. But I feel like this just turned every recipe on its head and like had a better result and was fun to do.
Oh, that's so interesting. So the chickens were sitting out in the kitchen at room temperature?
Oh, no. I did not mean that. No, in the walk-in. I apologize. Yeah.
Okay.
It was in the walk-in, and I hope I'm getting this right. It's so long ago, but yeah, I remember asking about it, and it was like, oh yeah. That's what, you know, we do that with all of our birds to dry out the skin.
Yeah. And that's even a step in the Judy Bird, the Russ Parsons dry brine turkey is an optional step. But you, after you've, you know, had the turkey sitting in the bag with the salt for, you know, 3 days, I think, as an optional step, you can take off the bag, kind of pat it dry and let it sit in the fridge. If you remember, and if you have the space to have a raw turkey just sitting naked somewhere in your fridge.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I remember the name being like, it forms a pellicle on the skin that makes it crisper. Don't know where I got that word, but that's what I associate with that.
I don't know, but you should use that in spelling bee whenever you can.
Pellicle.
It's going to come in handy one day, I think. That's how you're going to get to Queen Bee.
Yes. I haven't gotten there yet. Oh, that's so interesting. Is there anything else you've seen in the evolution of crispy skin seeking?
I don't know. Like that definitely like was far and away the standout.
Oh, do you remember when Helen Rosner used her hairdryer?
Oh, that's right.
And the whole kerfuffle of people misunderstanding why she was using her hairdryer on a chicken.
What did they think she was using it for?
She was using it similar to what you're describing on the cool setting to dry out the skin in like all, even like in the armpits, like all over. I think she was trying to get the skin as dry as possible. But people who didn't read that context or, you know, wanted to just make a big to do on the internet thought she was trying to cook it that way.
Oh,
with the heat of the hair dryer.
That would take a long time. And also who's got the patience to just stand around with their hair dryer on their chicken?
It's like the recipe you're talking about is slow roasted. This is like slow, slow roasted.
With a little bit of like salmonella thrown in there.
Yeah, that was the thing that came to mind for me of like ways that people have sought crisp skin. Also, I guess just high heat roasting too. Like Barbara Kafka's, you know, cooking it at 500 does make super crispy skin too.
Yeah.
Be prepared. There's a chance it'll get kind of smoky in your oven.
That is true. And I think it comes down to also kind of like what, you know, like, you know, if you want to have that beautiful, like roasted, you know, full roasted chicken look, you know, for presentation purposes or whatever, you might want to do a technique like Barbara Kafka's, you know, the recipe that you and I were talking about. You know, you end up with a platter of shredded chicken with crumbled chicken skin on top. So it's a very different kind of thing. No one would look at that platter and say, oh, this is a roasted chicken, right? They would just say this is like delicious chicken, but it happens to like use a roasting technique to get there. So I loved it all around. How about you? Tell me about some of your favorites.
Let's see. You know, I did a little bit of digging into our top 10 genius of the year, because that's always it's always a nice way to reflect back on everything that I've loved during the year and that people in the community really responded to too.
Yeah.
And that's always really telling too. I mean, always desserts are high on the list, but that's great. Like I love desserts. I love to keep bringing new cookies and cakes to people who clearly are excited to bake them. But it's also always the savory things that I find really interesting, because that part of the list can vary more from year to year.
Mm-hmm.
This year was no different. The top two recipes were cakes. So the first one was Yasmin Khan's, the title of the article was A Stunning Citrus Cake in One Bowl and One-ish Step. And this one was like across the board, across like article, recipe, podcast, video. It was super popular across the board, partly because it had this just absolutely stunning photo of like, it's a two layer cake, but the sides are kind of naked, uh-huh. and a cream cheese frosting in between. And then just these little curly cues of citrus zest on top. And it was just, I think at this moment, we were coming out of the end of winter.
Yeah.
And it just felt like a ray of sunshine to see that photo. And also the technique really shocked me, because it's basically a standard creaming technique, except that it all goes in one bowl. Mm. And like basically just all gets mixed together. And I just had no idea that you could do that. You know, I knew that there are all kinds of different ways of making cake. And of course, like with cakes with oil, it's a lot more forgiving. And so you can just kind of dump everything in. But with softened butter, I sort of thought that unless you were doing something like a reverse creaming, which would be totally different, where I think then you're like mixing the butter with the flour. I think Rose Levy Barenbaum popularized it. I've seen like a few different kinds of approaches to creaming, but I never realized that you could take the standard creaming and just throw it all in and it's fine. You know, you might have a slightly different texture. You're not going for like a super fluffy texture, but it totally works. And if that's the type of cake you're going for, and you maybe, you know, you're frosting it with this lovely cream cheese fluffy frosting, which also is a one bowl operation, you don't need to worry about it.
It sounds super cool.
Yeah. So that was like a hit across the board from Yasmin Khan. The second and the top recipe of the year was a cake from Dori Greenspan. It was the first recipe that I shared from the Simply Genius cookbook. And I really love this one because it's a riff on a really well-known recipe, but a new riff. It's her French yogurt cake, but this one happened to be with blueberries and thyme in it. So it was a really nice summery cake. And the sort of signature technique of the yogurt cake is that she rubs the lemon zest or whatever citrus zest she's using into the sugar. And that just like exponentially multiplies the citrusy fragrance. And it changes the sugar so much. You've done this before,
yeah.
I'm sure, right?
I think actually based on a recipe from her, actually, yeah.
And I think she told me that she, when I interviewed her about that technique, she learned it from Pierre Hermé when she was working with him. And he just kind of did it as if like, of course, this is what we do with citrus zest. And so that's become, she calls it the smushing technique. Now she does it with anytime she has something she wants to amplify the flavor of in a baking recipe where she has sugar to work with, she smushes it into the sugar to spread it around more. So she does it with zest. And in this recipe, she also does it with the thyme.
So it's the French le smushing technique?
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Hey, it's Kristen. We'll be back with more of my conversation with Amanda Hesser in just a moment. And we're back with Amanda Hesser, co-founder of Food 52.
Kind of going back to our discussion of acid earlier, which is just that, you know, great. I often like the best desserts either have like some, you know, meaningful element of acid, which balances the like sweetness and the richness.
And actually, I wonder if that carries through with the other, let me see on the list. The other desserts on the list are cookies.
Mm.
So the cookies are, let's see. Okay. I was on sabbatical for a month earlier this year, and we had a few guest hosts. And one of our guest hosts was Samantha Senavaratna, who chose Dori Greenspan's magically caramely chocolate chip cookie. So that was actually the number three recipe of the year. I'm sure that has a good dose of salt to balance out the sweet too. And she bakes those in a muffin tin. So the sugary edges of the cookie get caramelly from baking in a muffin tin and having contact with those hot edges.
That sounds so good.
And then the other cookies on the list, Tara O'Brady's basic great chocolate chip cookies. And then the last cookie on the list is Jesse Sheehan's epic snickerdoodles.
Ah, okay. Well, you know what? Maybe I'll have to try that one. I'm not, you know, I've never been a big snickerdoodle person. So yeah, I know. It's like you seem so disappointed in me. I'm sorry, Kristen.
No, I'm not disappointed. I just we're really different on this count because I'm like the biggest snickerdoodle person. And actually, these are different from, like, I think of snickerdoodles of my youth as being fairly pudgy and quite tangy. And of course, there's the cinnamon and sugar. But these spread more. You might like these snickerdoodles more than most.
Doubt it. No, just kidding. Wait, so I'm looking them up here on the site. So are they called the ultimate snickerdoodles? Or
they're epic. Epic snickerdoodles.
Epic. Epic. Okay, sorry. All right. No, you know what? I'm going to try them, and I'm going to dip them in ketchup, and it's all going to be awesome.
Yeah, maybe if you eat it like that, it'll warm your cold snickerdoodle hating heart.
Yes, exactly. They look caramelized.
There's brown sugar, which is not common. I think there's a bit of cinnamon in the dough, but that I could be wrong on. But I think the more of the brown color comes from the brown sugar.
Yeah, there is. No, there's a little bit of cinnamon in the dough.
Okay.
Yeah.
My memory is failing, but the like recipe memory is the one thing I still have.
Oh, thank God.
I guess. But the thing about hers that I really appreciated was, again, this is like, it's almost like I hate cream. I really don't hate creaming, but like, I just really appreciate new ideas in, how to get to things faster, and like have it not feel like a sacrifice. So she almost fully melts the butter, but leaves a little bit of it still in like visible chunks. And then as she's whisking that, and she does have a little bit of shortening in there too, but as she's whisking the almost melted butter, it kind of cools, it melts and cools in the same step, basically, because she doesn't fully melt it. So that is what helps her get to like the right temperature she needs for the cookies to spread just as much as they do. And something about the proportions of her snickerdoodles, you don't have to ball them. You don't have to roll them into balls to have them like flatten out into those pretty perfect circles just by scooping them with a cookie scoop and dumping them in the cinnamon sugar and tossing them around, they still make a cookie shape that's not kind of wobbly without having to individually roll each one like a meatball.
Got it. Okay. I'm sold. I'll give it a whirl.
Anyway, we've talked about a lot of desserts. There are a lot of savory recipes on the list too. And those always delight me because there seem to be a lot of salads year after year. This year, Ali Slagle's Not Just Another Chicken Caesar Salad, which is amazing. And she like basically like pan fries the chicken thighs in the marinade that she has also used already for the dressing. Like she makes one batch of marinade. Half of it goes to dress the salad with a few extra little seasoning touches. And then half of it is the marinade for the chicken. That does not, it only marinades as it's sitting there. You could marinate it longer, but you don't really need to because it's so intensely flavorful and it has like the anchovy and the Parmesan right there in it. And that kind of like crisps up on the chicken. So that was a phenomenal chicken Caesar salad, very popular. And then the other was the Genius Potato Salad that converted a potato salad skeptic. And this one actually was written while I was on sabbatical by our former editorial lead, Brenda Iyer, about Monifa Dio's potato salad. And that one actually was our most popular YouTube video.
So what distinguishes this?
I think it's quite thoughtful and fancy. It's like she makes an aioli. She either poaches or soft boils the eggs and kind of leaves them in chunks. Mm-hmm. So it's just like every, you know, it's not a potato salad where everything is just kind of like blended together, kind of the way my grandmother would have made potato salad. It's like every piece is kind of is babied kind of. Do you make potato salad? Do you like potato salad?
Yeah, I love a great like vinegary German potato salad with bacon in it. And I don't think I've ever really learned how to make that super well, but grew up with a great German kind of food store near us. And I kind of grew up with a great model in my head of what it can be. And yeah, and I just like learned in France, you know, that they're more into like kind of like the vinaigrette potato salads, and that just that, you know, you always dress it while the potatoes are warm so that they soak up the dressing and it infuses it more. But yeah, I'm certainly by no means a connoisseur of potato salads, but I'm a fan of them for sure.
Well, we've talked a lot about these, all these recipes that we loved making this year. I also want to hear what you're looking forward to next year, though. Either things to cook or, you know, what else you're excited about coming up at Food 52.
Well, what I'm really excited about is just that, you know, we're going to be working with a lot more contributors next year. And so that to, you know, me means like, you know, more ideas, more like variety of cooking. And for me, it's like, it's sort of a playground, right? Of just getting to experiment with new ideas. So I'm very excited about that. And I think that we're just going to have like more and more like fantastic recipe content in the coming year. And I decided recently, I was like, you know, I really am interested in, like, I really love Korean food and have for many years, but I really haven't cooked much of it. And I think that I would like to do some, you know, kind of dive in and learn more about the cuisine.
It seems like a great time for it. There's so many amazing cookbooks focusing on Korean and Korean American food that have come out in the last year too.
Yeah, that's so true. How about yourself?
I'm really looking forward to finding more unexpected recipes or recipes in unexpected places. Mm. Like, I just got a tip that I'm really excited to test soon from a community member. You know, I'm always scrounging around, reading everything I can, looking in every new cookbook, looking in old cookbooks. Like, I'm paying attention and trying to gather genius tips on my own. But it's always the things that the community sends in that are the biggest surprises for me. And I guess this is sort of an unofficial nudge to our podcast listeners that I really do love when you send in tips, and I love making those recipes, and that's what has powered it all these years.
Yeah.
Is getting to discover completely surprising things from other people who are great home cooks and notice when something is special.
Yeah.
Okay, we're just about out of time, but I was wondering if before you go, you could share any recipes you're excited to be making over the holidays.
Well, I was invited for the first time to a holiday cookie party next week, and you have to bring a dozen. I don't know why, but I was like, well, of course I got to bring two different kinds of cookies because that's more fun. And I wanted to have like two very, very different kinds of cookies. So I'm going to do Susan Spungen's triple ginger chocolate chunk cookies, because I love a really gingery cookie that has chocolate in it. Like, I'm happy with a ginger cookie, but I really love ginger and chocolate together. So I wanted to do that. And then I also wanted to make Sarah Kiefer's, I always call them the pan banging chocolate chip cookies. I have to say, I'm so excited to be making holiday cookies because I have more time to do so this year than I have in years past. I often there have been years where I've bought the ingredients and they're sitting on my countertop and I just never get to it because the holiday season is our busiest time of year at the business. And it ends up actually feeling like a source of stress for me. And for the first time in a number of years, it's now like a source of joy, and I'm going to do it on this weekend and I can't wait. I love getting to cook from the site because we're putting out all this great content all the time, but I don't, it's, you know, it's sort of like the cobbler's, you know, children have no, don't have any shoes. Sorry, I don't know exactly. Mm-hmm. That's not exactly how it goes, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I always feel like I don't, you know, run a food site and don't get to cook nearly as much as I would like to. So really excited to get in the kitchen.
Thanks for listening, and my thanks to Amanda Hesser for taking some time to look back over this past year with me, even if we'll have to agree to disagree about certain cookies. This week's episode was put together by me, Kristen McGlory, executive producer Harry Sultan, and with post-production by Crutch Phrase Studios. I'd love to hear about your favorite recipe of the year at genius@food52.com or by tagging me on Instagram @McGlorious. And if you like the Genius Recipe Tapes podcast, the very best thing that you can do to support us and to help other people find our show is to take a moment to leave us a 5-star rating and review. or send this episode to anyone in your life who has strong snickerdoodle feelings, just like Amanda and me. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.